Author called Michael Connolly, but so I'm bringing him in a bit early, and thank you, and just have a book. It's called The Connollys, A Nest of Irish Rebels. Good morning to you,
Michael. Hello, sir.
Just off the bat, the first question I asked you when you came in was, were you related to James Connolly, and you're not.
No, no. Well, he was born in Scotland.
Well, not relatively, but you at the same time.
But I think way, way back, we're probably all related anyway.
But they're related in the sense of the rising, aren't they?
Yeah.
Your family.
Did you ever hear of Mac Lysant? He was a professor in genealogy, and he reckoned that the Connollys were a sept of the O'Neills, who were kings in Ulster many moons ago.
Okay. I'm just looking at the pictures. A beautiful book to cover, and I'm just looking at flicking through it.
Some of the pictures haven't been seen before.
They're the ones to cover, are these the actual relatives?
That's the family, yeah. The one in the middle is the grandfather. He was the patriarch, and they're his children who are involved in the rising. They were in the City Hall garrison. Sean, the one at the top there, he was... in charge of the garrison in City Hall. He was shot on the roof by a sniper, you know.
Okay. And I was just reading through some as well. One of your relatives was in Stevens Green. They went
that was
later
Joe.
On.
Joe.
Yeah,
Connolly,
later on became fire chief.
Yeah, he was.
So
indeed.
He survived.
Yeah, okay. He did.
Can we talk about yourself? Sorry, and then we'll talk about the family and the history and the book.
Well, I've been living in Africa for over 30 years, about 35 years now. I went there, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I'm not so sure it was a good idea to stay.
It must be 30 years there now, so.
Yeah, I'm a veteran. I haven't lost my accent, though.
Certainly
they tell me.
What part of...
I live in Joburg.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying that okay as if I knew where that was. I have no idea.
Well, it's in South Africa.
Okay. Well, I mean, as I said, you must be enjoying it and living it now. Time to write a book. Have you written other books?
Well, the writing has been going on. I must be honest with you. The writing has been going on a long time. The youngest of the Connolly boys was Matt Connolly. And at the time of the rising, he was 15. And he was in the City Hall under the command of his brother. And from the time he was a very young man, he kept... chronicles of his activities, and before he died he gave them to me, passed them on to me, and he said, you know, see if you can do something with that. And this is the result. Of course, a lot of my own research went into it subsequently.
So part of the chronicles he left to you, and then also lots and lots of research.
Yeah, it was the bones of the sort of historical things, you know.
Yeah, because a lot of the people that took part in it, I mean, we hear of the big names, Connollys and the Pierces and that,
but the
backbone of it are the people and the men and women that are forgotten about.
Yeah, that's very, very true. You know, the Citizen Hall garrison was an extraordinary place. There were a lot of, I think there was over 10 women in the garrison, you know, with Kathleen Lynn, Dr. Kathleen Lynn, she was there. And there were two sisters, Norgrove was the name, Emily and Annie, and they were there with their father. And their mother was up in the College of Surgeons, and they had a younger brother in the GPO.
Wow.
So these are sort of people you know nothing about.
Yeah,
you don't hear about
all the families involved.
Yep, exactly.
I'm just looking here at your great-grandmother's. She was evicted for signing up to the Land League. That's why I mentioned men and women.
Yes, about. Well,
because women have been airbrushed out of history to a fair extent.
It was a citizen army thing, you know. Men and women were equal.
Yes, yeah.
And my aunt, you'll see her on the cover there. Katie Barrett was her name. Down at the bottom.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah. She was in the Citizen Army, and she was in Cumann na Mban. And when they surrendered at the City Hall, she was incarcerated in Kilmainham Jail for a while.
Well, Brenda was talking about your relative that fought in Stevens Green and then became the fire chief. But then, sadly, you had a relative who was Sean Connolly, who was a great actor, seemingly. Tell me about him.
Yeah, well, he was very involved. I don't know how he found time, because he was a singer. He was with the Emmett Choir. He played hurling and football. He won a couple of junior All-Ireland medals. And when he died, he was 33 years of age, and their youngest child, Madge, was born on Valentine's Day in 1916. So she was 2 months old when her father was shot, which was rather tragic. Yeah. But he took part in over 50 productions in the Abbey. He was a great friend of W.B. Yeats and Lady Gregory. And he was also very friendly with Douglas Hyde, who became the first president of Ireland in the Gaelic League.
And as you know yourself, that programmes out there, Who Do You Think You Are, and stuff like that, and you see them and they're all very
supportive.
I don't know if you've ever seen any of these programmes. I've seen one or two. And maybe they go, my father was a slave. My father was this. My auntie was that. Was there anything when you were doing your research or in the Chronicles that, wow? That made you say, wow?
There was an incident, which I say, my grandmother, my grandparents had 16 children. And there's an old Italian saying that says, sex is a poor man's opera. So I think my grandparents must have been the Pavarotti and the Callas of their day. But not alone did they have 16 children, they also adopted another 4 informally.
Wow.
A family member died, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They took on another 4, which was... The story goes back to 1840. They had a small holding. My great-great-grandfather had a small holding in Ovidstown in County Kildare. And they were tenants of a guy called Barton, Nathaniel Barton, from Barberstown Castle. And the whole area was divvied up into small holdings. Mm-hmm. They only had a little over 2 acres. So, you know, it was subsistence.
Yeah.
And then in 1883, they were evicted onto the side of the road. But before that happened, my great-grandfather, Richard, was up in... he was working for a guy called Lord Massey up in Killarney, out in the foothills of the Dublin Mountains, mm-hmm. up near Montpellier Hill, where the Hellfire Club is still standing.
Indeed.
As a ruin. And they had an interesting thing happen to them. In 1867, the weather was atrocious and his wife was very pregnant. She was due any minute. And a party of Fenians came over the hills from Wicklow and Wexford. And the weather was atrocious and they couldn't see where they were going. So he couldn't leave his wife, who was imminent, so he sent his young son, who was 11 years of age, to guide them to the Battle of Tala Hill in 1867. And the kid went off and showed them where Tala was, and then he turned around and came back. And when he got back to the house, he had a young brother that he didn't know about.
Okay. I was just wondering... As you're speaking there, and 30 years in Africa, and you're back, obviously promoting the book and seeing family. Had you intermittently come back a few times?
I've been back a few times, yeah.
I just don't know what you think of the country now.
I see an awful lot of changes. And you know what really irritates me greatly is the graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting.
Okay.
It's not civic pride anymore.
I know, but I thought you were going to say maybe that some of your ancestors would have been spinning in their graves.
Oh, they are. Well, I do a retrospective in the back of that book, and I tend to be a bit critical of especially the politicians and especially the church.
I've been very generous now. a bit. No, that's what I was wondering what you thought of. The way the country has turned out after all of... When you research a book like this, you write a book and then you come home and you see what's happening with the people on the streets, with the health service.
I'll tell you what sort of I have noticed. I'm only here a few days, but that this whole abortion thing is very decisive.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be splitting the country down the middle. I don't know, is that a fair comment?
Oh, it is, yeah. Well, I mean, it was like that before in the last election. I'm sure it'll be all sorted out by the end of the week, and we'll see. It'll probably go on and on and on. And what about the politics in South Africa? How did that, you know, get into that over the years?
Well, it's very different. That's
many
what
changes.
That's right. Very different.
Okay, let's
go back. The old days, the politicians used to steal 10% and leave 90% for the inhabitants. Now crowd that are in there steal 90%, leave 10% for the rest of us.
Oh, they're copying us, so. See. Okay.
Yeah, they learned a lot of lessons, you know.
Anyway, the book. How long did it take you to do the research? And how long
you
was
know,
it?
On and off, it's taken me about 7 or 8 years, mm-hmm. I suppose, you know.
I suppose, before we talk any more, where it's available, how people can get their hands on it.
It's published by a company up in Drogheda, Choice Publications.
It's a beautifully turned out tome, I must say.
Yeah, I like the quality of the paper, and it's an easy read. The script is quite a decent size. You don't have to strain yourself read anymore.
It's a great, I could say it's a great, coming up to holidays, it'd be a great holiday read when you're on the plane and that. As I said earlier on about the nature of the research and coming into the people, besides yourself, other ancestors have come forward, brothers and sisters.
Well,
and like that.
As I was starting to explain to you, my grandparents had 16 kids and they adopted another 4. Some of them died young, didn't reach adulthood. Some of them reached adulthood and got married. Some of them didn't marry, and the net result was that there were 24 grandchildren, and I'm the last one standing.
Really?
They have an Afrikaans expression which says a late lamaki, a late lamb. And I think I was a menopausal mistake. But in many respects, it was good because I was able to sort of grow up surrounded by these people, and it was a different world then, as you can appreciate. There was no cell phones, there was no Google, there was nothing like that. You made your own entertainment. And grandmother's house was the magnet. We used to home in on that place, and all the nephews and nieces and everything else would get there. And at Christmas we'd have a big hooli in the house. It's a big old house in Sean McDermott Street, and it was full of these. A lot of the doors had these red velvet curtains around them to keep the drafts out. You know? And I was always just waiting for a hand to come out from behind one of these curtains, grab me by the neck, and the entertainment was good. I had an Uncle Eddie. Everybody should have an Uncle Eddie. And he used to play the piano and sing, and then some of the other uncles would do recitations, you know, Green Eye of the Little Yellow God type of thing.
Yes, yeah,
and,
yeah.
There was a couple of very nationalistic recitations too, The Man from God Knows Where and Robert Emmett's Speech from the Dock, this sort of thing. And then Joe, the fireman, always had a tin whistle in his top pocket, and he'd give a few bars on the tin whistle. And he usually sang Valley of Sleave Na Mon. That sort of thing was very in vogue at the time.
Indeed, yeah.
And of course, the old radios were battery powered. You had to keep getting these batteries charged. They'd only last for a while.
Mm. I'm just looking at this. You were talking about Sean McDermott Street and your grandfather. Who was he was persuaded by Connolly not to fight because he had too many children. So, you know, take a back seat there, you have too much in the family. But he went on to be greatly honoured after his death, didn't he? And, and he was involved in the transport union too.
Oh, he was one of the first in, after the Rising, there was a lot of changes, and Sinn Féin came very much to the fore with regard to the elections. And they set up a lot of these commons around the place. And they had two named after Sean, the son who was shot. One was in Dublin and the other one was down in Naas. Mm-hmm. And the old man opened them up. And they were very successful in some of these elections. I think they got 75 members elected in about the first one of it that they stood for. And he did a lot of canvassing. You know the expression, vote them in to get them out. They were locked up at the time, and if they got voted into Parliament, the theory was that they'd be released from jail. That was the first time that was used,
okay.
In 1917.
But it was a great, the people that attended his funeral when he died, it must have been like a state funeral.
Yeah.
5,000 people attended the funeral.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrific. So how do you feel when you sort of, as I say, when you're researching this and then you're putting her on paper and it's coming through your head? I mean, you must make pictures in your head.
Yeah, but you know, the curious thing is that the more often you proofread something, the more you can see that's wrong with it, or there could be a better way of putting it together, you know, that would make a lot more sense. And even since it's gone into print now, there's a few things that have come up that are interesting. You were talking about Joe, the fire chief. He was picked up. He was in the College of Surgeons, and when they surrendered, they were brought down to the Rotunda. Mm-hmm. And before Joe left the College of Surgeons, he whipped a curtain off one of the windows, and they were left out all night, as you know. They stripped poor old Tom Clark of all
indeed,
his clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe had this curtain anyway, which he wrapped himself up in, and he wasn't too miserable over it, you know. But he ended up in Frangok with his father. And, of course, his father had taken no hand actor part in the play. He wanted to go, and he had some guns hidden out in a, there was a hen house outside, and he used to put the guns under these broody hens, you know. So he was all set to go, and his wife locked him in the back kitchen, and he was really irritated over that. But there was collusion between James Connolly and the family. James Connolly figured there was enough of them out.
Spread around. Okay, I'm just looking. You have a website, Connolly's Comments.
Yeah, I've sort of amused myself at that. There's a very interesting development. There's a company, there's a website, I should say, called www.writing.ie. And they have a segment called Mining Memories. And they're always hunting for old stories. And these are stored and made available to the Irish Folklore Commission. And I've been pretty active on that. And one of the things I did, it's fascinating coming back here, because I remember as a small child, I used to go to the Theatre Royal.
Yes,
in Hawkins Street.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote an article on that. And when you start researching that, you discover extraordinary things. Did you ever come across Jack Doyle, the Gorgeous Gael?
Indeed, yeah.
Well, he starred there. He had he used to sing with his wife. He married this woman from Tahiti called Movita.
Yes, indeed.
But before that, he was courting the daughter of the Chrysler Motor Corporation. And the father figured that Jack was a gold digger, so he put some heavy weight on Jack to sort of get lost, which he duly did. But he married this Movita, and they were a singing duo, and they starred in the Theatre Royal. And she went on later, they got divorced, and she married Marlon Brando.
Brando, yes, yeah. I remember, yeah, and got parts. I mean, it's a great, great history. The Theatre Royal, great, great history.
Do you know another thing that's very interesting? When Thomas Ashe died, you know, he was in Mountjoy, he went on hunger strike, and then before he died, they moved him to the Mater. Joe Connolly drove the ambulance that took him there.
Wow.
And when he died, they mounted the guard of honour over his body, so that the British.
He died through the force feeding, yeah.
But, you know, he was related to Gregory Peck.
There you go.
Here's one for you.
What's this? I can't remember the saying, 6 degrees of separation. Oh, that's what it is, 6 degrees of separation.
Actually, it was through his mother's side, I believe.
Okay, The Connollys, Nest of Irish Rebels. It's published by Choice Publishing Book Services Limited.
In Drogheda.
Yeah. And you can look up Connolly Comments. And also, you were talking about writing.ie.
www.writing.ie. And it's Mining Memories. It's under the Mining Memories segment.
Okay. And as I say, it's only 2 years since the centenary. So, I mean, still people. I mean, we do a history piece here every 2 weeks on all sorts of things to do with around that era.
Yeah,
16 to 22, and the interest of people still are showing in it.
Yes,
and I think some books like this should be in every library.
Yeah,
they should be taught in school as well. You know.
Yeah. So, but you know, I've been involved with. We have a Irish South African Association, and there's a lot of expats there, and I've given talks over the years, and it amazes me how little these expats know about their history.
Well, there's a lot of Dublin people, a lot of Irish people know quite very little about the history.
And we've had a couple of family gatherings in America and that, and I have a lot of nephews and nieces out there, mm-hmm. and they know nothing either. Mm-hmm. And I've made myself available because I know where the bodies are buried, sort of thing.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
They have come back and asked me questions. Their own parents, in many cases, didn't tell them anything.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
And then there was that sort of attitude a long time ago, like you can talk but say nothing.
Yes,
you know?
Indeed. Well, that applied to a lot of things, isn't it, of course. This is a great book for anyone to catch up on their history of that period of time, and it'd be a great present for anyone. But as I say, it should be in the libraries as well. You were saying there are a lot of expats over there, so there's a big Irish community.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of clergy there in the old days, as you can imagine, but they tend to be getting very old now. I noticed a lot of them seem to be disenchanted.
Do you have an Irish club?
We have, yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, it's Irish South African Association. Mm-hmm. We have three chapters. We have a chapter in Johannesburg. We have one in Durban in KwaZulu-Natal. And we have one in Cape Town.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know you said like you had reflections on whether it was worth going up, but I think you really secretly love her over there. That's why you're staying. That's why you're staying. Okay. Listen, anything else, Michael, you want to tell us before I let you go? Any more anecdotes before you go?
Yeah, I'll just have to think of something. You know, I'll tell you a good story. Will that do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Sisters of Mercy, they there's still a few of them left there, you know, and there's one elderly nun, and
it's before 12 o'clock now, it's before the watershed, it's okay to tell a story. It's before the watershed, well before it's
o'clock. But this
before
nun,
the
anyway,
Angelus, I should say, go on.
Her name is Sister Mercedes, you know.
Yeah, is that your phone?
It must be. Sorry about that.
Okay, no problem at all. Okay, Sister Mercedes. Okay.
Sister Mercedes, and of course the joke is like, are you one of the Benz family? You know,
yeah.
Which of course she's not. And she tells a fantastic story. These nuns in the 1800s, they're full of missionary zeal, and they arrived in South Africa, and they went to a place called Mafeking, mm-hmm. which is sort of in the middle of nowhere, and they built a convent and they built a school, and they were moving ahead very nicely. I think there was four or five of them there at the time, and then the Boer War broke out and Mafeking was sieged by the Boers. Mm-hmm. And inside was Baden Powell, who started the Boy Scouts.
Yes,
he was
indeed,
in charge of Mafeking at the time. And he commandeered the convent and the school and moved the military in there into their billets. And they were there for a number of years, and then the war fizzled out and everything else. And the Reverend Mother at the time sent an invoice to Queen Victoria for the use of the school and the convent for the period mm-hmm. of 3 or 4 years or whatever it was. And Queen Victoria sent a check for the amount of money.
Really?
I thought that was a good story.
Yeah, indeed.
You wouldn't expect it.
You certainly wouldn't. Listen, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. As I said, The Connollys.
It's my pleasure.
The Connollys, Nest of Irish Rebels, is published by Choice Publishing and Book Services in Drogheda. Is that right?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. Or there's e-books as well, you know, for Kindle and what have you.
And then you can look up writing.ie and then Mining Memoirs, or look up Connolly Comments. It's been a great pleasure having you,
Super.
John. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.